Hey, welcome to another episode of Optimize Your Body podcast. I'm really, really happy to have had my mate Pete Evans back on the show. The last time we did a talk, can't believe it, Pete. It was actually almost 2 years ago we did that last interview on the show. And it's a typical cliche thing. The last couple of years have flown by, but genuinely, I felt like it was like last year, but it was almost 2 years ago.
Great, hello, mate.
You're looking fresh as always.
Thank you, brother. And good day, everyone that's watching and listening. And you're looking great too, Marty. Good to see you looking so well.
Thanks, Pete. Yeah, you too. Have you been for a surf this morning? Are you, because you're probably up at your house now in Byron, right?
Yeah, we live sort of an hour out of Byron and an hour out of the Gold Coast. So it's a little bit of a drive to get to the beach. It's an hour drive to our local, which is Cabarita Beach, which is sort of dead bang between the Gold Coast and Byron Bay. And the waves have been pumping for the last 2 months. So I think I've surfed pretty much 90% of the time when we're not running retreats. I'm out in the surf. But today, first time in a long time, it's actually pretty crappy. So I've given it a miss today, and we're going to do some work on the land because the sun's shining. We've just had 4 or 5 days of rain. So it's we've got a couple of hundred acres, so it's time to get on the mower and the whippersnipper today after this. So a good day to be had, and not every day needs to be surfing, but I do love it.
Fantastic, man, fantastic. And just for the audience as well, all you've got to do is type in Pete Evans on Google, but you'll see.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Exactly, because you're probably going to get in trouble just for typing his name in nowadays, right? That's another conversation, but he's an internationally renowned chef, Restauria. How do you say that? Well, how do you even pronounce that word, right? Restauria?
Restaurateur. I was 20-something years, but not anymore.
Not anymore. But anyway, entrepreneur, keynote speaker, author, television presenter, documentary producer. These are all, you know, stuff he's done in the past. Obviously, he's got a podcast. Awesome podcast, by the way. Shout out to Evolve with Pete Evans. Fantastic podcast, which I featured on before as well, which was a win for me because I'm a fan of the podcast. But also, you know, he's big into exploring nutritional and emotional well-being, and he's got a massive passion for food and a healthy lifestyle, and inspires individuals and families all around the world, man. But like I said, it's great to have you back on, my man. And I know we touched on some of that stuff before, but even the magic pill, right? It's like, you know, we talked about this last time, but obviously, you know, Pete got canceled off everything because he's actually got a pair of balls. And he speaks what's on his mind, and he's not afraid to. And he's always been like that, which is why, you know, I got a massive amount of respect for you, man, because you've never cut any corners. You've always taken the hard route. It's paid off for you because you've had a massive impact on other people's lives because of that. And obviously, you know, you are where you are now for a reason, right? Because you've got a lot of courage. But even the magic pill got taken off Netflix, right? I noticed that. I was doing my research and I was like, they even took Magic Pill off Netflix. Come on.
Well, that was an interesting one. We had a 2-year contract with Netflix, and I was surprised, but also very elated when they decided to take it on board. And this is way back, probably 6-7 years ago. And when we first released it, and I was stoked. It was just like, wow, we're going to get this message about healthy eating out to a huge audience. I mean, Netflix is the biggest, I think, that's out there. And so it ran its course for 2 years, and it was shown in every country, I think, every territory on Netflix, except for North Korea. And I thought that was you know, amazing. Millions of people must have watched it. And it was just fantastic. And obviously the contract ran out. They didn't renew it. I don't think they do that with a lot of movies. So I don't think it was deliberately because it was my film that they canceled me as such. It was just how their contracts work. But it's out now on Amazon Prime if you want to watch it, or Apple iTunes. So it's still available for people to watch. And I think it's quite a timeless film because I watched it again. I hadn't seen it for 5 years, and I watched it probably 3 or 4 months ago, actually driving to the surf. I had it just playing in the car, and it's still highly relevant these days, and I don't think it's aged that much. And so if you haven't watched it, it's a beautiful journey into one of the foundational principles of what I call long-term regenerative health, and that's using food as one of those tools. Obviously, there's many more tools out there that you espouse and so many others do, but I, without a good understanding of nutrition and how our bodies work, I think we're on the back foot. But once we understand that and we can incorporate that into our lifestyle, then I've always said that just that one choice of nourishing ourselves through self-love, through the food choices that we make. It opens up the possibilities a lot easier, I believe, to have a look at those other foundational principles of long-term regenerative health, which is emotional well-being, our belief patterns, our relationships, our dialogue that we have internally and externally with ourselves and with our community, our friends, our family, and as well as sleep, as well as sourcing good water, as well as what you're very famous for is moving our bodies in a way that actually nourish us instead of causing us pain and shortening our lives. So food is what I love about food as well. Not only is it sort of the lowest hanging fruit, I believe, for everything, because it does give us the vitality and life force energy to be able to go on and work out and look after our bodies and our minds and our spirit, but it's also delicious. You know, there's no pain involved in creating a beautiful dish and nourishing ourselves with it, you know, and that's why I think it's such the lowest hanging fruit for people, is because it just brings immediate pleasure.
100%. I think, and speaking of pleasure, right? Touching on, I agree, it's timeless, that documentary. I looked at when it was released, it was 2017. I'm like, I don't want to bring up stuff in the past, but it's gold. I really loved it. And just for the audience as well, it did show a lot of stories of patients who struggle with like chronic medical issues like asthma, diabetes, cancer, all those kind of things. And they recovered fully from switching to a low carbohydrate, high fat diet, right? But the big thing is avoiding those ultra processed foods, right, Pete? And they hijack it. The way I explain it to people, because I've coached so many people, and you know this yourself, they're engineered to make us eat more of them, essentially, right? So they essentially hijack our brains. So speaking of delicious, they're highly palatable as well. And once we go down too far down that road, like I showed on the documentary of eating those foods, you know, we're asking for trouble and it's hard to recover from. But then on the other side, then when you're eating whole foods, they naturally tend to keep you more satiated. And if you look at some of the beautiful recipes and stuff that Pete makes, it's no wonder your meals are delicious, my man. You know what I mean? I wish I could cook my meals like that, but yeah.
Well, it's really interesting. I've been watching your journey as well on Instagram, and I celebrate your brother because you are putting it out there. And over the last few years, my wife and I we still follow a low carbohydrate, beautiful fat or healthy fat approach with good quality protein. But these days, I just turned 50 last year. We're incorporating a hell of a lot more animal protein and fat into our diet than I once was. You know, I used to sort of do 50-50 plants, vegetables, fruits, nuts and seeds along with my meat. But these days it's nearly, some days it's 100% just pure meat or pure seafood with no plants at all. And I don't have an aversion to plants. It's just my body seems to enjoy more meat, more seafood in that's, it's a very simplistic nature. And I shared something last night. I've got a beautiful little outdoor grill from this four-wheel drive company called Drifter Four-Wheel Drive, and they've created these little fire pits that you can put in your four-wheel drive or in your car and take down to the beach and light a fire, depending if it's legal or not to do that. But we've got one just set up on our deck here, and it's a tiny little contraption, and I love it. And I always say to Nick, I'm going to go light the fire for our grill for the night. And it usually takes 30 minutes to 45 minutes to get the temperature just right with some charcoal and some beautiful wood. And last night, Scotch ribeyes, actually, grass-fed and finished ribeyes and some lamb and mint sausages, gluten-free. And that was our dinner, little Japanese mustard on the side and salt and pepper. And I tell you what, it is so delicious and so simple. I've learned the simple things in life are often the best. So yeah, the further along this journey I'm going, I already knew the importance of good quality animal products from land and sea, but I'm really placing an emphasis on that these days. And my body seems to be thriving even more than when I was incorporating more plants along with the animal products itself. And I just want to say, everybody is different, depending on your age, depending on your gender, and depending on your locality, depending, I guess, where you live and the climate that you choose to reside in. So I often say, and I will put this out there, find out what works best for you. Obviously, it's great to have some guidance from people, but my life and my body is very different to everybody else's based on my emotional beliefs, my past experiences in life, whether they be traumatic or whether they be celebratory. And yeah, find out what works for you. And there's no better doctor, in my opinion, than yourself to go on this journey of discovery and be curious about how your body reacts to the data that we put into it, especially in relation to food.
I'm glad you touched on that, Pete, because you're so right. There's so much variant from person to person when it comes to nutrition. And I've been on a similar journey. It's funny you say that, because it was about 3.5 years ago. In fact, you know Stuart Cook, right? He's got the podcast, The Health Sessions. I think he might have had you on his show before. He used to be the owner of 180 Nutrition and stuff. And he was just giving me, because I was on the fence. I was like, plants are giving me gut issues, essentially. Certain plants are definitely giving me gut issues. And it was really frustrating, Pete, because like yourself, I was thriving then. But over the last, it was literally about 3 years ago, I cut out a lot of vegetables. And I know that sounds a bit, and I wouldn't recommend people necessarily do this, but just the plants that were causing my gut issues and some skin conditions. And cut a long story short then, I've never felt better, but I have been way more mindful, like yourself, of getting a different balance of fats from other animal foods, whether that be even oils like beef tallow, ghee, all those kind of things, and being really strategic, having more organ meat as well. And I've never felt better. But Pete, gut health is so important, right? When it comes to if you're, like you just said then, if you respond in a certain way to certain foods, and again, everyone's going to be different. A lot of people thrive eating a lot of vegetables, you know, but for me, I didn't. Fruit, great, most fruits. But as you say, kind of like animal-based really works for me as well, you know?
Yeah, I mean, where we live, we're in the tropics here or Northern Rivers. And we were fortunate enough when we purchased this property that where we live, we've got a grapefruit tree, a lime tree, a lemon tree, a mandarin tree, and we've planted a whole heap of other things, avocados, mangoes. So we eat them when the fruit is ripe, we pick one off and we eat it, but we're not gorging ourselves on it, so to speak. And we give some to our neighbors as well. But so I'm not averse to plants and the beautiful fruit trees that provide us and nourish us. It's just, it's not my main focus these days. When I first started off promoting paleo, I was like, eat enough meat and animal protein and fat, and then fill your plate with vegetables. And I guess these days I see the vegetables and fruits as nearly like a supplement. You know, do we need them? Possibly, possibly not, but I don't think they're essential. And when you look through medical textbooks, it's fascinating because they talk about that in every medical textbook that the human body has essential amino acids and proteins that we need, but there's no essential carbohydrates that we need. So that should sort of pique our curiosity as to, if we don't need them, then why are they so heavily promoted in the government dietary guidelines and in other places in mainstream media? I mean, I was looking at the Sydney Morning Herald yesterday, and once or twice a week I have a flick through the mainstream media, and I was looking at their good food section, and they were talking about recipes for Easter, and the headline for that recipe, column in their magazine or the newspaper, was talking about 100 vegetarian recipes that you can eat that taste good for Easter. I'm like, they're really pushing plant-based and vegetarian vegan through the mainstream more and more, especially over the last couple of years. And I'm curious as to why that seems to be happening at this particular point in time in our human history. You know, is it because more and more people are switching to that, or they're interested in that, or is there some sort of, agenda behind getting people off meat? And there's, you know, you could go down certain conspiracy theories or agendas that are out there. I know the World Economic Forum is heavily pushing towards a meatless society in the future. And if you don't know who the World Economic Forum is, it's worth investigating. You know, people like Bill Gates are out there that are heavily into promoting a non-meat diet for people. And it's just a really interesting time to be alive, because we're we've got so much information coming from the mainstream, from influencers, from people like yourself and people like me, and for people going on this journey, it's like, well, what's right? That's why I'm grateful that you said, work out what works for you, you know, and be careful of the information that I share, be careful of the information that people like Bill Gates and the World Economic Forum share, be careful of, or be curious about why they're pushing this so hard at the moment.
Yeah, definitely be curious. And they had that documentary recently on Netflix, right, Pete? You Are What You Eat, I think it was called, right?
And yeah, I didn't watch it, but you can fill me in.
Yeah. So basically they did a study on, and it was a very short term, so it's not really a study if you ask me, if it's an 8-week study. But anyway, long story short, they did a study and they had two twins, identical twins, two guys. Full transparency, I haven't watched it, but I've done research into it and everything else. And I looked into everything and, you know, spoke to some respectable people I know in the industry. And yeah, long story short, one of them was in a calorie deficit. So he was eating less food than the other one. The vegan guy was eating less food than the other one. And also, this is really important, right? At the end of it, the guy who ate the vegan diet, they asked him if he could keep it going. And he said, not in a million years. So there's like these little things when it comes to sustainability. Can you sustain what you're doing? But he had better blood markers, the vegan guy, but because the calories weren't controlled, yeah, the intake of calories they were having, that makes all the difference. You know, I think if you're eating less than you're burning, you can get your blood markers checked and they're probably going to improve if you improve your metabolic health. So there's a lot of it was multifactorial, but cut a long story short, it was the same producers as the Game Changers one. So yeah. As you say, you know, there's probably an agenda going on there, Pete, right? So as you say, it is important to be curious about these things. And I think simplifying things as well, Pete, like what you're touching on there, I think what we're talking about here is if you can avoid those ultra processed foods, and because people get really confused, and I just say, look, single ingredient foods, right?
Yeah.
You know, even if it is plants, even if it is onion, potato, you know, and then you go to animal-based foods, beef, chicken, it's kind of hard to go wrong. And, you know, if you eat, and obviously you've got to be mindful of, if you want to go down the list in terms of importance, you've got to be mindful of, you know, the pesticides and everything else. But that's kind of, if you can focus on that fundamental, right? Eating single ingredient foods, eating good quality sources, which is obviously really important, as you say, it kind of helps most of the time.
And I'll add to that because, you know, the calorie deficit, that makes a lot of sense because we know through, whether it be intermittent fasting or longer controlled fasting, whether it be 24 hours or 48 hours. Nick and I, my wife and I, run 5-day fasting retreats here in summertime. And people have such beautiful transformations without eating anything for 4 or 5 days. And because basically we go into a very quick state of ketosis and autophagy. Most cultures have some sort of fasting involved or in their history as well, whether it be a religious belief or spiritual belief, or just as human beings, we are designed for feast and famine. I mean, it is, that's how we can use ketosis or use our fat stores to get us through long periods of not being able to eat, because we would have needed that, or our bodies would have adapted to that ability to go for long periods of time without food. And because we're not herbivores, we don't need to graze 16 hours a day or 18 hours a day like the cattle do or the horses do. We're not that species, and we don't have that type of digestion. So fasting is something that's quite often overlooked, but can be super profound. I like to do a 5-day fast once a year. Some people do extended fasts. I had a woman get to a retreat here, and I'm not recommending this to anybody, but she had cancer for the fourth time. And the first three times she went down the traditional medical route of chemotherapy and radiation, and the cancer came back the fourth time. So she didn't want to go through that process again. And she told me that she did a 49-day fast. And she also said it nearly killed her. It took her nearly 6 months to a year to regain her strength from doing that, because it was such a huge undertaking. And again, I don't recommend that. I'm not telling anybody to do long periods of fasting. Please, please don't do that. But and she healed her cancer, cured her cancer. And now what she does is she does a once a year or twice a year, 5 or 6 day fast, just to have that maintenance or management program for her, because she's realized that that works for her. And met lots of people that have done extended fasts, and they've had great benefit from it. But again, everybody is different. It could be the complete wrong thing for somebody listening to this. But I think, you know, a day fast here and there, or intermittent fasting, where we have our dinner a little bit earlier and extend our fast. So we have breakfast, maybe instead of 8 o'clock in the morning, we could try 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. I mean, it's interesting these days, I eat once or twice a day, and generally it's in the window between 12 and 4 or 5 p.m. And that seems to work for me the majority of the time with my energetic output. I go for a surf and it's not that much, it's not really cardio and it's not really working out. It's more pleasure and enjoyment and play. You know, you talk to any surfer, most of the time they're just sitting on the board waiting for a wave, and then they catch a wave, stand up, and then they paddle back out. And it's not that physically draining on us or exertion. So I seem to be able to get away with not eating as much as I probably would if I was training really hard. So again, you have to work out what your body needs, and your body will always tell you what it needs.
100% P. And I'm exactly the same. I eat once or twice a day. I just did a video on this, actually, and it's such a good point. The thing with fasting, I think, is a lot of people use it for the wrong reasons, right? Because if we're honest, most people want to lose weight. So they look at it as an approach to lose weight. Now, that's not all bad, but most people have struggled for a number of years losing weight, gaining it back, et cetera. And then what you're doing then is you're taking away, is you're already putting in your head, fasting, take food away. And that calorie restriction is what a lot of people have struggled with for a long period of time. So I'm glad you said that. And I honestly think for most people, and it can simply work because you've got a smaller window of time to eat the calories as well, right? But yeah, really, really works for me. But I think that's where most of the magic happens. I've never actually, in terms of the longer fasts, I've never actually done longer than about 36 hours, but yeah, autophagy, immune system, that's kind of when the immune system kind of wipes out all dead cells and replenishes it, which is why with certain cancer patients, they do like 72-hour fasts and everything else, right? And starve. But it's really fascinating, the research on neurogenesis as well. So there's a lot of really interesting research on just simply eating in a smaller window. But again, like you said, there's so much that goes into that in terms of, I think going back to what we said, food quality is the most important thing, I would say. You know, you need to be in those whole foods primarily, because if you're eating ultra-processed foods, then you try and restrict food and eat in a smaller window. That's not necessarily going to be sustainable for most people, you know. But that's exactly, it's been working for me as well, eating in a smaller window. I normally have like one or two, generally two meals, let's just say between 12 and 5, roughly.
Yeah.
I notice having that bigger meal earlier in the day is better for me. And I leave my carbs for the evening. And when it comes to carbohydrates as well, I've noticed as well, I took it a little bit too far, Pete. And I tend to do like 2 months a year now where I'll just eat protein and fats. It'll just be mainly carnivore. I don't want to use the word diet, but it's mainly kind of like meat, eggs, organ meat, a few of the fats and stuff like that. And I'll do that and I feel great. And then I'll cycle back to bringing carbohydrates back in. But what I've noticed is, I mean, I've started playing volleyball again now. I play volleyball like twice a week. And when I start bringing cardio in, I need more carbohydrates. And when you look at performance as well, there's quite a lot of research to show certain types of training, if it's, you know, anaerobic or explosive stuff, like lifting heavy weights or doing stuff like which involves sprinting, like, you know, volleyball might, it might be, you know, a varied pace kind of stuff. It can be really, really helpful. But with intermittent fasting and doing the fasting when you have your retreats, right? And you have people fasting for like 4 days. I can imagine it would be life-changing. And what I really learned about fasting, Pete, I'm not sure if you learned this, it taught me what true hunger is. That was one of the most valuable things I had from just like going longer periods without food. And I love what you said there, because that's what I recommend to people as well. A lot of people are like, you know, I want to just go to eating one meal a day. It almost becomes like a buzzword. Oh man, one meal. It's like, no, no, no. The average person eats 8 times a day. I don't know if you know that, but the average person, they say they eat 3 times a day, but because a lot of us eat mind, or a lot of people eat like mindlessly at times and snack, and actually we're eating 8 times a day, they found in research. So going from one extreme to another is never going to be sustainable. So I think, you know, it's really important to go, okay, I want to maybe eat in a smaller window. So I'll eat my breakfast at 9 or 10 a.m. instead of 8 a.m. Love that advice. That's the exact advice I give, because it needs to be small changes, really, just to see how you feel. But All that to say, fasting taught me what true hunger was. Also, bodybuilding did as well. I'd love to know the profound benefits that you saw people had, because I'm fascinated about how they felt mentally, energy levels and everything else from just restricting food. But also, they're doing all the other amazing stuff on your retreat. Like, I bet they were doing ice baths and doing saunas and the magnesium stuff. I'd love to know a bit more about that.
Yeah, we have a float tank. We have 6-person sauna from Found Space, which is a Sunshine Coast and Victoria company. Great saunas. They've got a new model out, which is just spot on. It's such a beautiful sauna experience. It's clean. We've got an Odin ice bath, 2-person ice bath. And that's at the retreat. And my wife and I, we've got our own infrared sauna and a small little ice bath too. And I've been in it this morning. I have a sauna and ice bath every day, and so does my wife. And we don't overdo it. We just some days I feel like having 2 sessions in there. Sometimes it's just 1 session for 15, 20 minutes, and then the ice bath for anywhere from 30 seconds to a couple of minutes, you know. And I'd never have the timer out there trying to beat anything. But and at the retreat, we bring in different therapists as well that do body work for people. But the transformation that people have, and I say this when they arrive, is you're going to get to know parts of yourself that are ready to be seen and ready to be felt, because food is such a distraction for people and it takes up a lot of time, whether it be cooking for your family and then doing the dishes and then obviously consuming the food. If we're doing that 2 or 3 times a day, it can be hours of our day. So when we take that out of the equation, we've got a lot more time to be with ourselves. And that is generally what happens. Emotionally, things arise. People equate fasting with what happens in breath work, what happens with psychedelic experiences, with plant medicines, toad medicines, all of these tools that we have available to us give us these opportunities to learn more about ourselves. And fasting, what that does, like the other modalities, is it gives us time to sit with ourselves and be with ourselves. And as I said before, listen to your body. My philosophy is that we have all of the answers already within inside us. And that makes sense, because we are, you know, I don't want to get too deep here, but our bodies have cellular memory from the start of time, basically. So, and we're all connected to one another. So we have the ability to access information if we're willing to ask the right questions of ourselves and give ourselves enough time to be able to find those answers that are within us. And it's fascinating, because I've learned this over the years, is human beings tend to want to tell you their stories of their past and of their present, of what seems to them to be the issues in their life. And that might sound like a lot to take in and a lot to process, but I invite you, whoever's listening or watching this, when you're around friends, family, colleagues, if you take the position of the listener and the observer and you allow the other person to open up and share their stories, it's nearly inevitable that they will. And if you listen long enough, the person telling you their story will also tell you the solution to their problem of where they're at in their life at this particular point in time. And I know that, again, might sound really strange, but I invite you to just be aware and conscious over the next week or two and just take that position to listen and observe and then process what people are telling you. Because what I've seen and witnessed so much, especially running retreats, is instead of telling people what to do, just listen. And there's an old saying, the greatest doctor is always the one that will listen to their patient the longest without interrupting, because the patient inevitably tells the doctor what their ailment is and why they've got it. It's just human nature. We tell these stories of, this has happened to me, this is happening to me, and then what the answers are. So going back to fasting, instead of having somebody fix our problems for us, look at ourselves as the as your own doctor, like I said before, about what to eat and listen to our bodies. And with fasting, what it gives us is the ability to spend more time in that stillness, in that silence, in that contemplative nature of our thoughts. And things arise for people. And then they've got the time to be able to really observe what those things are. And until you've experienced it, again, it's like a sitting down for a ceremony with a shaman, plant medicine or toad medicine, and things arise because you're giving yourself the right conditions for you to feel, for you to listen, for you to process, and then make the changes that come from that through your solution to the issue or issues you may be experiencing at this particular point in time. I know that's we could do a whole podcast or 10 on this. I'm fascinated by this because, again, food or no food is the lowest hanging fruit. I mean, fasting is free. But then it gives us the opportunity and the vitality, as I was mentioning before, to look at these types of questions of who am I? Where did I get that belief from? Why do I say this to myself over and over? Why do I attract this type of relationship into my life? Why do I have this issue with my boss at work or my staff at work or my colleagues or my friends or my partner or my children or reality, our social structure? Why do I feel like I don't fit in here? You know, and these types of thoughts that can run our lives, our programs. So being able to identify what our programs are and our patterns are and our limiting beliefs, and then going on that journey of empowering ourselves to make those changes if we need to, or accepting who we are with complete acceptance and love and trust and surrender, you know. And that, again, that's another podcast, but I hope that answers the question.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, 100%. Because we don't realize that we're actually, a lot of times, we're just on autopilot. And a lot of the times people are making decisions primarily on emotions when it comes to food. If we look at the average person, look, you know, we've all been there. Most of the decisions with food are based on, you know, emotions, environment and stuff. So like going back to what I said about fasting, it taught me what true hunger was, because I was into that kind of, at the time, into that bodybuilding mindset of eating. There was no rationale behind it, but I was eating like 6 meals a day and everything else. And it just becomes a habit. So from what you're saying, it's introspection, it's self-awareness, it's taking time to actually stop. And that takes me on to nature and social connections, right? But I think something that is almost, I don't want to use the word, everyone throws the word epidemic around now, right? But the reality is there's an epidemic in lots of different areas. But when it comes to social connections and like mental health and stuff, right? I know you're bringing people together with your retreat. I think I looked at a study recently, and it's the equivalence of smoking 15 cigarettes a day in terms of the negative impact on your health if you've got stressful relationships in your life. I don't know how they gauge that, right? There was a big study done, toxic relationships, stressful relationships, or whatever you want to call it. That's the impact, right? That's the equivalence, 15 cigarettes a day. So obviously it's not good for your health. And the day and age we live in now, obviously we've got technology and everything else, which is great. We're here now having this chat. But obviously it distracts us and we get sucked into this, you know, online world sometimes, and we're not really valuing those. And I know this because I still have to be really intentional with this. And I think even men more so have to be more intentional about these relationships, you know, because women, they tend to be more social creatures generally by nature. But all this to say, Pete, how important do you think the social connections are? And I'd love to know, it must be profound in terms of what you've seen on your retreats, just bringing people together as well. Out in nature as well.
Yeah, it's such an interesting conversation about social interaction. Obviously, we as human beings thrive with social contact. You know, it's why they put prisoners into solitary confinement, you know, as a form of torture. And one of the things I learned long ago was, can I be in a state of contentment by myself equally as when I'm around other people? And I'll say that again. Basically, can I be happy or content or neutral if I am alone as I am around other people, whether it be one person or whether it be 1,000 people at a concert or something like that? Because I believe that is true freedom. because I've witnessed it so often that people's greatest fear is being alone. One of their greatest fears. Not everybody, but some people really fear being alone. And that can drive us to make perhaps choices in our life that we compromise. Like, okay, well, that's my greatest fear. I don't want to be alone. So maybe I'll have a relationship with someone so I'm not alone. But maybe that person isn't the right person for me. And I intuitively know that. But my fear of being alone outweighs my perhaps frustration or misalignment of the person that I'm choosing to be with. So one of the things I've explored is how do you not make poor choices based off your irrational, based off fears? And my journey has been over quite some time to identify what my fears are and then find a way to confront them in whatever which way I can. I'll use sharks as an example. I was petrified of sharks and terrified of sharks for such a long time. And I love surfing, as mentioned before. I was like, geez, this is a dilemma, you know, because I love doing this sport.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about that earlier when you were surfing. I'm like, this scares the shit out of me still, full transparency.
Yeah. How do I confront this? Because I want to go surfing and I don't want to be in a state of fight or flight or fear. And I spoke to somebody that scuba dives, and they said scuba diving is a great tool because you go down there and you're in the shark's environment and you can do shark dives and go to Fiji or the Philippines or anywhere and go down in the ocean and hang out with reef sharks, you know. And that was such a great tool for me because I got to see sharks in their habitat. And it's fascinating when you're snorkeling or scuba diving around a coral reef, there are reef sharks out there which eat other fish. But you're witnessing the shark swimming around with thousands of other little tropical fish and other fish. And the other fish aren't in panic mode. They're not hiding from the shark because the shark's obviously not always eating 24 hours a day. I think they fast a lot. And so there's this beautiful ecosystem down there, and it really... that helped to solidify that, one, sharks are not always hunting. They're not always looking for food, and they're just in their habitat. And that helped me with my journey. That was one of the things that helped me on my journey to deal with sharks. And I'm not fearful of them anymore. Like, obviously, I'm aware that they exist, and I'm aware that I'm in their playground and that or their environment. And I know the risks that are involved, but when I step into the ocean, once upon a time, I used to be fearful, whereas now I'm excited to be out there. And I'll give you a great experience. Over the last week, I've had three different dolphin experiences within a meter of me. And if I went back to when I was in my teenage years, early 20s, if that had have happened, I would have shat myself. You know, in the ocean, having these big things pop up with fins next to me.
You bring back some memories. I've had these experiences in Byron Bay, actually. Literally, the best experience of my life, they're coming back to me now. I did scuba diving in Whitsunday Islands, and I was where you live, right? Byron Bay. I know you live an hour away, but I was at the beach of Byron Bay there, the main one. Exactly the same thing happened. I'm in there. It's shallow water. It's up to like my chest. And I saw three fins. And just like you say, I crap my pants. And then it turns out they were dolphins, and it was one of the most magical experiences ever.
Yeah, and that's what I get now. You know, I don't go into a state of panic, and that dolphin experience happens a lot with me out in the ocean, which is great. So to get back to the idea is to identify what our fears are. So if being alone is a fear for you, find out where that came from. You know, was it some sort of abandonment as a child? Was your parents not around when you needed you? What happened in your early life or whatever, or first separation of a loved one, death, if it was a death of a loved one, or was abandonment from your first love in a romantic relationship, somebody left you or cheated on you or this, that, and the other. So once we can identify what our fears are, then we can consciously move towards them and face them, or to help get to that state of neutrality and contentment in those things. And I think that's such a powerful path for life. I had the same thing with death. I was afraid of death, and I went on a psychedelic ceremony, which you get to experience your death before death comes. And I've been through that process a couple of times or a few times, and it was the most beautiful gift. And I'm not recommending anybody do psychedelics, but for me, that was a profound insight into facing my fear of death. And now what that has given me is a greater appreciation of life, because I've experienced in my context or my belief what death is and what happens afterwards and what happened beforehand. And so that gave me a really beautiful appreciation of this gift of life without fear of death either, because I guess I've experienced what's on the other side from my understanding. And it is equally as beautiful as this, but it's very different from this human experience as well. So social interaction is a really interesting one. And going back to it, obviously we thrive in those conditions, but some people don't thrive in those situations as well. Some people are self-complained, the loners or the black sheep of the family, and like to be by themselves. And that potentially can be, you know, a limiting belief pattern or fear, because deep down, why wouldn't you want social interaction? Are you fearful of being hurt? Are you fearful of someone causing you pain from perhaps, again, childhood or adult experiences of people showing distrust to you, people ripping you off in finance or in business or in relationships or this, that, and the other? Were you lost as a child in a shopping center or something like this? And crowds now are the issue where they cause too much stress on your nervous system. So I like to get to that state of neutrality or contentment in all situations, whether I'm at a concert or in a shopping center or at a busy airport or by myself when my wife goes away, and being in complete contentment and peace in all situations. And I know that's a big statement, but these are the types of things that I think about and journey inwards to find out, why am I not comfortable in these situations? And I'll finish by saying this, you know, one of my greatest fears was public speaking and being seen. And no mistake that I got myself into a position where I had to public speak, or I didn't have to, but I created the environment where I could face my fear of public speaking and then also being seen by going onto television, having that career, being seen by millions of people around the world, and then getting to the stage of being on stage doing talks and having thousands of people sitting there listening to me for 6 hours. You know, if somebody had said to me at 18, "You're going to do this," that was my greatest fear in life. But I knew that that was my greatest fear. So how do I get myself into a position where I can confront that fear? And I remember early on in my career of public speaking, I spoke to a veteran of public speaking. I won't tell you his name, but he's been in the entertainment industry for 4 or 5 decades. And I asked him before I got on stage, because I was petrified, I said, "Do you still get scared?" And he'd been doing it for 3 or 4 decades at that particular point in time. He goes, "I get scared every time I go out on stage." And that was the trigger for me to go, well, I don't want to be like you and be fearful of something in 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So I used all the tools that I had and found tools to be able to get to that place of neutrality, that I could get up on a stage in front of thousands of people and not care what anybody thought about me or my presentation. That's their shit. It's not my shit. You know, my goal was, how do I get out there without being nervous? And I achieved that. And it was one of the greatest gifts that I've ever had given to myself, because again, it was a huge fear for me. And I didn't want to live in that state of saying no to things that potentially could help people. Talking about nutrition and teaching people how to cook delicious food. You know, my fears shouldn't be the hindrance on my ability to communicate. So, yeah, So social interaction is great. If you feel uncomfortable in those situations, ask yourself why. If you love being around other people, but you don't like being yourself, being by yourself, that's probably another important question to ask. Why?
Awesome. Awesome. So much of that resonated with me then. But yeah, the public speaking thing, Pete, I'm getting back on that circuit this year for the same reason, because it scares the crap out of me. I've done it not to the scale you've done it, but I haven't done it for a few years. And I just know how much of a growth experience it is, number one. Also, number two, adding value to the world, right? And just facing your fears. You know, I think that's up there. I heard recently it's up at the top of the two biggest fears at the top for humans is public speaking and basically just like being stood naked in front of people, right? Which is kind of obvious. But I've done that when on the bodybuilding stage back in the day, Pete, right? Stood pretty much naked with a pair of Speedos on. So I've tackled that one. I'm not going to do two in one, though. I'm not going to turn up naked to the public speaking thing. That won't go down too well. But yeah, no, there's some really, really insightful things there. And I think what you said then about being alone with your thoughts, I think when I moved to the other side of the world around 7 years ago, obviously to Australia, that taught me a lot more about that. Because obviously you're trying to build new connections here. I was spending a lot of time on my own, and it made me really learn to be not only okay with that, but to actually really, I've always been a little bit, whatever you want to call it, a little bit introverted anyway. But now I actually really enjoy being on my own. But I equally know you can take that too far as well. So for anyone listening, they're like, yeah, I'm an introvert too. You can take that too far and then avoid, as you say, because you get really comfortable on your own. But really it's you know, humans need each other, right? It's just a fundamental need. So you've got to, for me, I have to be kind of more intentional at times of actually being more social and everything else. Pete, I could talk to you for hours, my man. Is there anything else you wanted to say on that? Or if not, let us know where we can find you or anything you want to share with the audience.
Well, I just wanted to ask you actually about your experience. I think over the Christmas period or this early this year, you went over to South America and you were sharing some amazing meat photos and videos. And I want to ask you about what was the best thing that you ate over there in relation to the best meat and the way that they cooked it. And tell us where you were exactly.
That's such a good question. Yeah, so my girlfriend's brother is an amazing cook. He's got it at his house. He's got the full proper, what is it called? It's basically like a restaurant there. You know what I mean? Where they got the it's like the grill, but it's, there's actually a name for it. They call it in Brazil. I can't think what it's called now. But anyway, the way that—
Asado, is that what it's called? I could be wrong.
It might be that. But anyway, it's like the next level kind of cooking facilities, right? Like you can't beat it, but the meat is so, and she's from Mato Grosso do Sul. So it's like, she hasn't met anyone here in Australia, for example. I met her here in Australia, of course. But she hasn't met anyone here from her state. So it's like in the middle of nowhere. And they actually happen to get the best quality meat in the whole of Brazil. I think Mato Grosso is number one. Mato Grosso do Sul, which is south Mato Grosso, is the second best for quality of grass. Obviously, it's all grass-fed, grass-finished. A lot of her family are farmers and everything else. The fruit that you said about picking fruit off trees, like I've never tasted fruit like it. Like obviously, I haven't been where you're at out in nature properly. Obviously, I buy food from the markets and stuff here, but you know, picking the mangoes off the trees. But the best meat I had, I think the best cuts were either picanha, which is the famous one. Picanha is an interesting thing. They only have you heard about picanha? So they only have, I think it's only in South America, they have cows which have like a hump on their back. The same as like a camel. If you picture like a camel, they've got one big hump on their back. All of the fat there builds up and everything else. So that's what you're eating. You're eating the hump of the cattle or the cow, whatever you want to call it. So it's a little bit fatty, but obviously lots of, you know, good balance of fats and stuff, some omega-3s as well. Tastes absolutely phenomenal. And the other one then was costella, which comes off the rib of the cow. Oh, but man, there were so many different cuts. It was unbelievable. It blew my mind. But the beef out there, all the different types that they had, and it was literally coming from the farm, the local farm. It was absolutely incredible. Such a phenomenal experience. But going back to social connections, Pete, one of the most incredible experiences for me out there was just how much they value each other. They literally live for family and for each other and to eat food together. Everything's done together. So for me to, I've never experienced that much love. Next to my mother, obviously, I've never experienced that much love from people. It was insane. So the whole experience was mind-blowing.
It's so good. And I think it's so important as well. We're talking about connection, and I got a couple of teenage daughters. They're 19 and nearly 18 now. And there hasn't been one meal that we've ever had together where we all haven't sat down together to share it. Like we've never. you know, since they were born. And I think it's so important that we share food together where we can, you know. If you're by yourself, then so be it. Enjoy that experience by yourself. And just because you're not sharing it with anybody else doesn't mean it's not a celebration. If you are, you know, I've traveled a lot by myself. I actually went to a restaurant two nights ago with Nick, my wife, in Byron. It's a beautiful restaurant called Bar Heather. Amazing meat, amazing seafood, just done so well. And I used to travel 9 months out of the year on different projects, cooking shows here in Australia and also in America. And I said to Nick the other night, I said, you know, I used to eat out every night by myself when I was filming in America, which would be 4 to 6 weeks every year. I wouldn't go out with the crew. I'd just purposely me time, you know, and I'd go to a restaurant, sit by myself, order the food. And that to me was equally as a celebration as it was sharing food with other people. And it's just perception. It's just mindset. It's a belief that we have. And so if you are alone and you are cooking for yourself and you haven't turned it into a celebratory meal, perhaps just look through a different lens and look at it as self-nourishment and self-love. And the last thing I wanted to say, because I didn't say it before, was what are the easiest ways to be able to continue what I would call a great diet is to cook extra. So for instance, when I was talking about the steak and the sausages last night, I cooked all the sausages that we had. I bought more so that we could eat it today as cold as our lunch, which I'm going to do after this podcast. I'm going to have a couple of sausages just to stimulate me. And so cooking extra, and then if you don't have the ability to reheat things, again, it's perception. Change your belief as to how you like your food. If you choose to, you know, I love cold meat the next day, whether it be roast pork, roast beef, steak, sliced sausages, whole or sliced, roast chicken, or poached chicken that's in the fridge, eaten the next day cold, like absolutely sensational. And again, just to change your perception, and maybe you have a little sauce or some mayonnaise, good quality mayonnaise to dip it in, or some pickles or something like that. But I believe everything is about our perception. You know, we can always see ourselves as the victim. We can see others to blame for our circumstances, or we can just embrace who we are and what we have available to us at this particular point in time on our journey in life, you know. And the last thing I'd say is be very careful of comparison to other people and where they are in their journey on life, and focus on ourselves and not be in that state of comparative nature, especially in today's world, as you're talking about with social media, because we only get to see a snippet of what people want us to see. And so I'm not really on social media these days. I'm taking a sabbatical, and it's probably going to be a very long sabbatical, whereas I don't really share too much about my own life these days. I've done that. I just share what I think is relevant that's happening in the world. But then again, that's just my perspective on what I think is important. And it's probably not important to the majority of people yet, or maybe never will be.
It's crazy that you say that, because I share a lot of stuff as well, Pete, right? And I shared a post the other day. I had so much good feedback in terms of, like, I just said, you know, Pete and I, we struggle with the same things as everyone else. Everyone you see on social media all struggles with, you know, whether it be procrastination, fear of failure, fear of rejection, perfectionism, self-doubt. I went down the list. It's like everyone gets those struggles, but the key thing is, can you normalize it? Are you comparing yourself to someone else's highlight reel and just, you essentially were delusional and thinking that person, that everyone gets the same struggles? I think the difference is being able to normalize that as part of being human, right? I think it's, yeah. You know, so.
100%, brother. Thank you so much for having me on your program once again. And I will finish by saying everything that I've said today, if it resonates with you, fantastic. If it doesn't resonate with you, fantastic. Don't believe anything that I've said, and just be curious about your own journey. But I do appreciate you giving me opportunity to have a chat with you, and to everybody that's listening or watching, thank you so much for your time, and I love you all.
Thank you, Pete. Really appreciate you coming on again, man. Really enjoyed that.